This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast on 97.3 The Fan is presented by Hummel Casino. Fun above all else.
Well, listen, we did finally find one creative Dodger fan on Twitter. I can't even remember who said it to me. This made me laugh hysterically. They got me, they got Ben, with the crying Jordan faces on, and it laid me out. It really did. Even after the loss, I had to laugh and go, all right, that's pretty creative. Very, very well done. And he goes, these new Ben and Woods billboards are going to hit hard. Yeah, 100%. Give it back, dude, because I'd be giving it to you guys for sure. And I think my overarching, I know you're going to defend the choke here, Benny, and I let me say this.
That's an interesting way to phrase that.
The word choke, right? You have to look at it, all right, from my perspective.
You're going to combat it, not defend
it. Combat it, right. Not defend the choke, right. I can't come in here every October and talk about the Dodgers choking and then not say the exact same about the Padres. That would make me a massive hypocrite because the Dodgers have choked in most, since we started covering the team, they did win the short season championship, right? In every single other one, they choked. They absolutely choked. They choked to us. They choked to the Diamondbacks. I can't come in here this morning and say...
Because they were the big favorites every single time. We already talked last week how the Padres weren't the favorites in this series. Can you choke the series?
They were after game three.
When you're up 2-1, you definitely are in the advantageous spot. And they did not come through, and clearly they're going to have to reconcile that and live with that. Historically, you know, outside of San Diego, they're not going to record this as one of the great chokes in baseball history. They're going to look at a team that was not favored going into the series. They lost two games in a row. I mean, they weren't up 3-0 in a best-of-seven series. They weren't up 2-0 in the series. They lost the first game.
You were up 6-1. You were up 6-1 in game three.
Which you won.
And then you never scored again. And then you lost the series. You were up 6-1 in game three in the third inning, and you never scored again, ever. You got two hits in the final game against a guy that you had torched every time you'd seen him. I don't know how else to put it.
I just don't think it fits the definition of what traditionally
that's buddy. So
you would
absurd.
Call it sure.
It's
you
absurd.
You have to be up
if
by at least
no,
a couple
no.
of games.
Padres glasses off.
You have
step,
to be
back.
The
step back.
Step
away from the microphone. Step back for a second.
Take
if
a deep breath.
Any
did
other
the Tigers
team...
choke the series against the Guardians? I don't think so.
Did they go 2-for-28?
They fell apart. They were up 2-1. I don't think they choked that series. The Guardians won their division, had home field advantage. They had not scored in 2 days, and all of a sudden they come back and win the series. And I don't think that was a choke by the Tigers.
Even though it was the exact they had their ace on the mound. They had their ace on the mound.
Right, well, if that's
shut
the case,
them out two
if
games
that's
in a
the
row.
Case, then yes, the Padres choked.
Yeah.
I don't think the Tigers choked, so I can't really say the Padres choked. That's not fair to say, oh, the Tigers didn't choke, only the Padres choked.
Mike Wood said the Tigers are a way different story. 100%, Mike. 100%. 100%. Our expectations, and we sat in here and told everybody
different story in that,
they were not even supposed to be in the playoffs, right? I mean, we weren't at the beginning of the year, but they made so many moves and added so many pieces, and they came together so well and they hit so well that yeah, man, they They absolutely got down to it. They had a 6-1 lead in the third inning of Game 3, and they never scored again after giving up a grand slam, ma'am.
I mean, they were wild card teams that did not have home field advantage in the second round series.
Yep.
Yeah, the Padres won 7 more games than the Tigers did, over 162. It's not as cut and dried as you think, though. I mean, the Tigers were as hot as any team in baseball going into the playoffs. Padres were pretty hot, too, in the second half of the season.
I think they would tell you they choked.
Okay, if the Tigers choked, then the Padres choked. I don't think the Tigers choked. So I feel like it's unfair of me to then say the Padres choked
as well. I don't think it's unfair at all. I hate it. I mean, I hate it as much as I hate to say it. I think it absolutely was. When you had a chance to knock out a division rival like that, and you had them on the ropes, and they had done some really, really shady, untoward things toward you. My whole thing of like, oh, thanks a lot, Dave. You just kicked the hornet's nest. The hornets died. The hornets never buzzed again. They really didn't. They just didn't buzz. They did not get mad. They did not handle business.
To me, you know, the Dodgers last couple of years getting a bye into the division series and winning one game total. That's a chunk. Padres won a playoff series this year.
Sure.
They advanced. They moved forward. They won two games in the next series. I don't know. To me, that doesn't really fit the definition.
The fact that they did not
choking in the playoffs.
The fact that they did not score at all and got two hits in the last game. The pressure was too much. They pressed too much. All of it. At the end of the day, you didn't get the job done, and it doesn't. Like, again,
now if they had,
the previous series, if they had gone out and
committed a bunch of errors and gave up a ton of unearned runs and looked sloppy in the field, I'd go,
didn't hit.
The pressure looks like it's too much for them.
They didn't hit. They didn't hit a guy that they had
than
hit.
At the plate, I mean, I just didn't see a team that looked like they were.
I don't feel like in 2024 or 2022, excuse me, the NLCS, I don't feel like they choked against
the Phillies.
They got beat 3 games in a row that weekend in Philadelphia. It sucked. It was painful to watch.
Padres had the home field advantage in that series.
We blew
though.
A 4-0 lead. We had no pitching, and Manaea and Clev and those guys could not get it. And we spotted them 4 runs. That was a choke as well. To that game.
I don't think the series was a choke. You know, the questionable, the Suarez, the Harper home run,
right.
All of that. It gave us a lot to question and talk about. I didn't view it. I didn't feel like they choked.
Last year was a massive choke job.
Well,
whole season. Last year was a massive choke job.
I would say last year was more of a choke than even this playoff.
I think it's, for me, at least, I think it's okay to say that we choked. I do. What I don't think it's okay to say is that we quit. That's where I kind of draw the line. This team did not quit. They didn't quit. They pressed. They did things that they hadn't done. That doesn't scream I'm quitting. You know, kicking the ball around, doing stuff like that, not taking extra bases, being lazy. That's quitting. This team never quit, man. They didn't quit for 162 plus the postseason. I never saw quit out of this team. I saw punting from time to time, which you have to do in a 162 game season. You have to. You gotta take your lumps. Nobody's going to go 162-0 ever. It's never going to happen. I don't think they quit. I will defend that to the death. Not the death, but I'll defend it to very loud words.
Did the offense get... Did they lose confidence?
Though? Yes. Somehow.
Is that essentially what we're looking at here? That the offense, which was so consistent, lost some of the faith that they had?
They quit for 24 innings. They did not quit. They didn't quit. There's no quitting. They're not standing up there staring at strike threes. You know what I mean? They didn't quit. The offense did not quit. They choked. Which one's better? I mean, it's 6-1, half dozen of the other. They didn't get it done.
It's weird, though. I would not classify that group
as quitters.
Or chokers.
I mean,
you look at these guys. They're not the sort of players that seem to shrink at big moments. I mean, all year long.
Right. They answered
when they
the bell.
Were late, I mean, late in close situations, best in baseball, runners in scoring position, best in baseball. They were as clutch as any team, any really Padres team we've ever seen in history. Did they forget how to be clutch? I mean, What changed over just 2 days? 2 days is such a small sample size over the course of an entire baseball season. This team should be remembered as one of the most clutch Padres teams in the history of clutch Padres teams.
I think,
and now we're trying to redefine them.
Except for when it mattered.
As like the biggest choking team that we've ever seen. Is there any other Padres team that you'd ever say choked? Is this the first Padres team that has ever choked?
No, I just said they choked.
That's true. They had the playoffs.
And they choked last year. They choked the year before that.
Was there any other playoff run where you felt like they choked? I thought maybe 2006 in the division series, they choked. I thought they were the big favorites over the Cardinals, and that was kind of a choke.
That's a choke. It was a choke. It happens. It happens to the best of them, man. It really does. It happens to the best of them. It doesn't make sense. We can't put our finger on it. I don't buy this line of BS either. The Dodgers are professionals. The Padres are not professionals. The Dodgers literally rub their wieners together after they hit a home. Kike Hernandez grabbed his third base coach's dong as he ran around the bases. Okay, they do weird little dances. We've seen their little celebration in the dugout. Let's settle down on the Dodgers are stodgy old white professionals, and the Padres are dancing peacocks.
The Dodgers are weird.
Let's keep that stuff, like, smarten up about that, for sure. Like, they literally rub the heads of their wieners together after they hit a home run.
They're a very weird team in my mind. I mean, they're good.
They're really good.
A lot of talented players. They get a pass.
You know, Shohei hits a homer. He rips his bat towards the dugout. No problem with it. You're celebrating. But don't then tell me that they are all a bunch of Adam Rosaleses that hit a home run and put their head down and sprint around the base paths. They hit a bleeding single. They get on first. They dance. They shake their hips. They're no different. They're no different than what the Padres do. None. There's zero difference in the teams. Jack Flaherty screams, "Sit down, mother effer." I didn't see Joe Musgrove doing it. I didn't see any of the other guys doing it. It happens. I have no problem with it. But don't paint them with some professional brush that the Padres don't get. They played their asses off. They played their hearts out until they did it. Until they didn't.
Well, I think generally from what I've seen, more people agree with you guys than me. I just can't.
It's hard to rationalize.
I can't in my mind.
I know. It's hard.
This season as a big choke.
Not the season. The season was fantastic. The season was so good. It was inspiring. It was all of the things that we said it was. It was brilliant. There was a no-hitter in there. There was all kinds of great stuff, you know, to witness. It was brilliant. Brilliant. It was an unfinished piece of art, man. It was the Mona Lisa without the hair. you forgot to add the hair. And so now it just looks really weird and incomplete.
I guess ultimately, you have to choke, in my mind, you have to make mistakes. Did the Padres make mistakes or did they just not hit? Hitting is the hardest thing to do in sports.
It absolutely is, but nobody was better at it than them.
Did the Dodgers just do something right or did the Padres actually do something wrong in the last couple of games? I don't know that we'll ever know the answer to that question. Whether it really was more of the Dodgers pitching or more of the Padres hitting. The Dodgers probably don't know the answer to that. It's that the weird thing about baseball that you can't ever exactly know what it is that causes success versus failure on a one or two game basis. Over a whole season, you look at the trends and you go, yeah, I can see why this team succeeded or failed. But in a short sample size, you don't know. I mean, maybe every team that would have faced the Dodgers the last 2 days would have got shut out.
Well, I mean,
would have had no chance.
The Mets just did. Which made me feel a little bit better.
They did get three hits as opposed to two. So if you want to give Mets credit for getting one more hit over nine innings.
No, I mean, Dylan Cease is Kodai Senga. Is what it is. I mean, both of them came out and just said, "Here you go. Take every bit of momentum." Dylan Cease broke my heart. With his starts in the playoffs. And you got him for more than you got him, you acquired him for more than you got from him in the postseason. And I think it's a good learning experience for guys like Jackson Merrill, Dylan Cease, you know, those guys that will be back next year. And hopefully they get better. And but again, man, when you don't hit, which was your forte, anytime your forte goes away, it's hard to not look at it and go, man, you guys completely choked it away. And you had the lead. You know, you just needed one. And you got beat by, what was the final of the last game? It was 3-0?
2-0.
2-0. Two solo shots. Couldn't scratch it out, man. So very, very tough to stomach. I know everyone's in a lot of pain still, which is okay. It's such a long season. It's a long season for us. It's a long season for you guys. I'm glad we could be there for you through the whole way, but we're not going anywhere, certainly.
You know, it's funny. I was just looking at the calendar, and you know, we'll have a couple weeks here where, you know, painfully watching the league championship series and the World Series, and then we'll be into November. A couple weeks in, you got the GM meetings, the winter meetings are in December. We'll have our extravaganza. And then we'll come back in January.
You ready?
In a couple weeks, we'll be at a fantasy camp.
Yeah.
And then spring training will be a couple weeks away. It goes really fast, honestly.
And I'm seeing a lot of people saying it's going to be really, really hard to get excited about next year. There's a lot of sentiment that this was our best chance. And I feel some of that too.
I don't disagree.
I don't disagree either. I feel like you really let one slip through your fingers, but you cannot go through life thinking that that's, you can't go through life thinking this today was the best day of my life and nothing good is ever going to come.
It was the best chance I think we've seen for the Padres, at least in a very long time. But the point is to come back and try to make an even better chance next
year. That's exactly right.
That's what every team is going to
try
to do.
Every team is going to try to do.
Will they? I don't know.
Not every team, but I hope ours will, and I want to talk about that next.
All right, we will come back. Well, don't do this as next. We're going to push back, take on Woods, maybe an hour.
Because
we got into that. Do you want to get into Dave Roberts and his admission?
Very unsurprising admission. I think it's important to do that.
We will do that when we come back with Ben and Woods after traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Don't do this.
It's time for Don't Do This.
What were you thinking?
Three stories from the world of sports that make us all shake our heads.
Why?
How many times do I have to tell you?
Ugh, I'm sorry, I fudged up, guys.
You idiot. You moron.
You dumbass.
The apple sometimes does far fall from the tree.
Don't do this.
Do not tweet that.
With Ben and Woods.
I like a Nickelback song or two.
On 97.3 The Fan.
Let me ask you a question, Woods. Did we do something wrong last week in our coverage of Dave Roberts, Manny Machado?
I don't know. I don't think so. It felt very
I think we knew it was a non-story.
Yeah.
Maybe we should have just treated it as such and not even brought it up, not even mentioned it.
I still don't know if that helps our guys hit the baseball.
No.
I doubt it does.
No, but I mean, we gave some oxygen to a non-story.
Sure, we also had nothing else to talk about.
That's true.
At a live remote.
Did we play into Dave's hands? That's what he wanted.
It's not about the media, though. I mean, it is. The one guy that played into Dave's hands is Ken Rosenthal.
True.
That's the one that gave this whole thing the oxygen that, you know, the life that it took on. If that happens, we come on the air and we laugh at Dave saying, bro, come on. You said you didn't even see it. And now you're making a big deal out of it? No big deal. It was the Ken Rosenthal piece in The Athletic, you know, dredging up anything that Manny's ever done wrong. That's the part that really was like, man, that's out of line.
So if you missed it, Dave Roberts admitted after the series, said, hey, I've got a really good relationship with Manny. That was a nothing story. I brought it up basically to take some of the heat off of my players after they had, you know, failed miserably in game two. And put it on me and just, like, change the narrative a little bit. And should more of the attention been placed on the Dodgers' failures? Like, continue to press the fact that they were on the verge of potentially collapsing for a third straight year. And did Dave Roberts' strategy apparently pay off for them.
Well, it
I don't know.
It did at the end of the day because of that article. And again, I don't think Manny, like we talked to Jesse Agler about it. He's like, I don't really don't think what Manny cares what they write about him. But you did see, you know, Schulte not letting Rosenthal in the clubhouse. Or not letting him in the dugout for the in-game.
Yeah, they had to replace him with Tom Rinaldi after a day in which Padres, whether it was players or whatever, clearly had a boycott of Ken Rosenthal. Even in the clubhouse, they didn't bar him, but when he tried to ask Jurickson a question, he got waved away.
So maybe that worked. You know, maybe your head was in the wrong spot. It's hard to say, but I did think it was you know, he. So here was his quote after. He was asked whether his delayed reaction was a calculated one. He said it was. As a manager, you never want to make it about you, don't you? But I just felt in that situation, if we could take it off our guys a little bit, Manny and I have a really good relationship. I would take him any day. But I don't think that diversion was a bad thing for our guys. They responded by having my back. So, I mean, look, if you're going to give Dave Roberts he was playing chess and not checkers. He couldn't have done what he did without Ken Rosenthal's help. And Ken's piece remains out of line. You know, talking about Tatis, talking about Manny, talking about Profar. Ken bought in hook, line, and sinker. And I, you know, again, that question at the end of the press conference to Dave Roberts was 100% a plant from whoever asked it. And Ken took that, and he ran with it, and wrote a hit piece the morning of a playoff game, which I thought was garbage.
So I definitely think Ken needs to address this. I don't know if he will. You know, the best reading of it, and the one that I tend to subscribe to, is he got played.
Yeah.
He thought, oh, this is an interesting, hey, looking for an angle. This is an interesting angle.
Hey, when in doubt, attack Manny Machado.
And, you know.
Yeah, but he could have gotten played and wrote a story continuing to highlight and talk about the throw from third base towards the Dodger dugout. Him going out and saying Tatis is a dancing peacock, Jurickson Profar is this, like that was totally separate, and
he's allowed to have that opinion. He's allowed to think Fernando Tatis Jr. is a dancing peacock.
But again, now, completely
it reflects on his opinions and his character, but it's not unethical to think that.
Completely absolving, by the way. Fans throwing stuff into the bullpen. Completely absolving fans throwing stuff into the field. Absolving. Completely.
But that's the best
reading. My point is his choice of words were totally separate from what Dave Roberts was trying to do.
If there was any coordination, like if the Dodgers or Dave like said, hey, Ken, any chance you can write something like this,
yeah,
that would be unethical. Now, I have not heard any suggestion that Ken did not just do that on his own and decide, hey, I'm going to throw an entire monkey wrench into this, you know, operation by giving this story that really wasn't a story, ton of oxygen on my gigantic platform. It was awful, and I think Ken needs to address that. I really do. And if he tries to ignore it, I will lose some respect. I mean, I don't think he cares.
But lose some
respect for Ken Rosenthal and you know what he does. At the very least, he needs to say, you know, I probably went too far with what I thought was a story and turned out to just be a ruse by Dave Roberts.
Yeah, just a total ruse.
I got used by Dave Roberts, and I have to own up to that. I feel like Ken at least owes that statement. Like, I got used by Dave Roberts, and, you know, I'll need to be better going forward and try not to let that happen again. That's my opinion. All right, we need a little doo-doo this. And I wanted
mega doo doo.
I said it earlier in that just sad clubhouse after the game, blank stares. You know, they pulled it together though, and the media gets let in. And I thought there were some great comments from Tatis and Profar. I talked to Higgy, talked to Jake. He was very red eyed. But they all stood up and talked. But the last person I talked to was Jackson Merrill. And if you can't just absolutely appreciate and love this kid for his attitude, listen to Jackson's entire comments here after the game on Friday.
Get to play ball game. How much does that hurt?
Oh, no. I got a salty taste in my mouth because I feel like for 8 months straight I've been going to the ball field and enjoying every bit of it. So, you know, I'll probably end up going tomorrow just to go. I don't care if I got to clean my locker out or sit around. If I get to go, I get to go. Yeah.
Get somebody throw you BP out there?
I'm not going to hit for a while. I've never taken so many swings in a span of time in my life, so you know, I get ready for the offseason, you know, get stronger, get better. There's areas to improve regardless of how much success I had this year. Like, there's so many areas I can improve in.
What happened to the offense the last 2.5 games, 24 straight innings without scoring?
Good pitching. We made good pitches the whole time. We missed our pitches a couple times, and that's all it takes. It's one or two missed pitches, and they can get away with it, get out of innings, and kind of keep rolling. But, you know, all credit to them. They're better than us. I'm not going to sit here and make excuses and say that we had it, we should have had it. No, they're better than us, and they beat us 3-2. So, all props to the Dodgers.
I know it's hard to see the future, but do you anticipate using this as motivation and fuel, you know, as you go forward in your career?
Yeah, I mean, I think I take every loss as motivation and fuel. It doesn't matter if it's the Dodgers or it's the White Sox from this year. Every loss is news to yourself on how you can get better and how you can prepare for the next time.
How are you different now than when you walked into that spring training complex in February?
I think I found a deeper love for baseball. I think I really didn't know the extent of how electric it can be and how much of a family you can build through an entire summer of it. I feel like my time in the minors has been a little different, you know, way different compared to being here the entire year, staying at one spot, playing with the same people all year and building a family, you know. All the post-game speeches, all the post-game celebrations, like, you don't do that at ton of the minors. And I feel like this year I had so much fun. I had the most fun I ever had playing a sport in my life this year.
That's just beyond.
Was he created
fantastic.
In a lab?
Yeah, he was, man.
He's just perfect.
He was. He's fantastic. He's a fantastic kid, fantastic player. He had a fantastic season. And that's the kind of stuff you hear, and it breaks your heart, man. Breaks your heart. What a good kid.
But it gives you hope knowing, you know, hopefully he's going to be around for a long, long time.
Sure hope so.
Story came out in the UT this weekend that even last year the Padres approached him about a contract extension. They could increase those talks again this offseason with a higher price tag, obviously, after what he did. But Jackson Merrill gets it and is a reason for optimism for the future for the San Diego Padres.
You get the feeling, too, that, you know, obviously we talked about his leadership throughout the year and the guys that he leaned on and respects and that showed him the way. And you do get the sense that he's not going to let anybody take a day off. You know what I mean? He's already, as a rookie, and hopefully the rookie of the year, just one of the most accountable guys in that locker room. And you can't help if you're Manny or Xander or those guys to go, oh, well, I got to keep pushing myself because this rookie's doing it. And he's been a godsend to this team in this city. And I love him. I love him, and I hope he's here forever.
Even at a veteran moment, I was in that clubhouse, and there was a whole scrum around Yu Darvish. And there was no room for it. I tried to get in, and Craig Huener with the Padres said, hey, you're blocking the hallway. They didn't get stuff out. So I just...
you got banged.
So I walked over to Jackson because he was sitting there, and I said, Jackson, I know this is tough. Can I get a minute? He said, absolutely. He said, is everyone else just going to walk over in a second? And I said, yes. And he said, let's just wait. And he said, yeah, you're right. I said, you're right. We'll just wait until... So I just waited patiently until everyone else joined us and got that sound. But that was a veteran move, so he didn't have to repeat everything twice. Jackson, good job. That's a do-do this on a Monday.
That was Don't Do This with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, one more time. Off-season Sammy. I liked postseason Sammy way more.
Way more.
But did a great job. Was up there covering it. Saw him on Friday. We will talk with Sam Levitt, our Padres pre- and post-game show host, when we come back here on 97.3 The Fan. It's definitely shocking and jarring that the season is over. Even when we knew it was on the line on Friday at Stadium, I never really got the sense that this was going to be it. And I think Sam Levitt must have the exact same feelings. You know, like you've been even closer to it than the rest of us. Every single pre- and post-game show, or almost everyone, traveling from spring training, the first day of spring training, you know, going to several of the road games, Dodger Stadium, traveling all the way through. And he is standing by. We will talk with off-season Sammy right after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. Yeah, Brandon pointing out in the chat, of course, Sammy also got to call his first two Major League Baseball games this season.
Yes, sir.
With the San Diego Padres, and he joins us right now here on 97.3 The Fan. Sammy, you okay this morning?
Yeah, I'm okay. I think some of the stun has worn off a little bit. Maybe watching what the Dodgers did to the Mets last night and continue this ridiculous run of pitching makes it sting a little bit less, maybe, just to know that maybe the Padres ran into some way, somehow, a Dodgers pitching staff for, you know, basically three games that all of a sudden can't give up a run, and they seem to be rolling all of a sudden. So maybe that makes it make a little more sense. But certainly on Friday night, and as that game went along and as it got late, to watch the Padres just offensively look like just a totally different team than what we saw for basically 167 games or so. Pretty stunning, pretty jarring, and I think this morning you both have done a really nice job in summing it up, and I think expressing a lot of what I feel and what a lot of Padres fans feel as well.
Yeah, it was a tough one, man, and you just got the sense, Sammy, that for me it was the Grand Slam. The Grand Slam just giving them giving them a little bit of oxygen to go, oh yeah, we still have really good players, and we still have a really good team of battle-tested, you know, those guys are in the playoffs every single year. And it just kind of woke them up. No fault to Michael King. I mean, he gave up a couple of bleeders, and then a really good hitter got him. And, yeah, you still won that game, and you were still feeling pretty confident. And, you know, the what-if game is what drives you crazy. It just drives you insane. What if we had started Martin Perez? I don't know that it would have been any different. I have no idea. I know that Dylan Cease was a huge acquisition for this team and really disappointed, you know, in the playoffs, certainly. But most of the guys did the last couple of games. So it's just tough to kind of pin your finger on one thing. What was your kind of overall, like, assessment on how the Padres, Mike Schilt, adjusted? You know, talked all season about being elite adjusters. And when the time came to adjust, it was like, nope, we're gonna keep doing what we've been doing. And do you agree with that sentiment? I do, by the way. I don't think you make any big drastic changes. I really don't. But it was just kind of odd to hear, and especially how it all played out.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think we all had that conversation heading into Game 5, and I think I may even had it with you guys or anyone else that I can't remember, about do you change something with the lineup?
Yeah.
Do you move a Profar down? I know maybe we went back and forth on maybe even moving Fernando up to the number one spot. Look, I was not surprised when the lineup came out that they didn't do any of that, because this felt like a group that was going to roll with what got them there. And look, that's a way of thinking about it as well. I think that the interesting part to me about this whole thing, I think it's going to be really easy to lump in the 24 innings together and that become the main narrative, as it should be, the fact that they didn't score for 24 consecutive innings to end their season. I mean, that's what I kept coming back to on Friday night after the game was, if you would have told somebody that the Tatis home run to cap that six-run second would be the final runs they scored of the series, is unfathomable. It is insane to think about, and I think it's really easy to lump it all together. I will say, I think it's worth acknowledging that each game from 3 to 5 and the struggles we saw and the reasons they lost were different. Right now, in retrospect, them going silent offensively after the second inning in Game 3, was not a great sign, now that we know how it all played out. Game 4 felt a lot different than Game 5. Game 4, Dylan Cease didn't set a great tone, and they fell behind. And, yeah, in retrospect, now you look at it, and it's like, wow, that was kind of the continuation of them not being able to hit. And then, to me, Game 5 was different. Look, them not taking advantage of the situation of sending Dylan Cease out there on short rest and, you know, ending it at home, that set up the possibility for a Game 5 where you allowed Yamamoto to have a much better start. You allowed their bullpen to keep rolling. And, yeah, it certainly looked, as the game went on, like things got tight. And the at-bats were not like the at-bats we saw all year. It looked like a totally different team. And kind of each step of that process from 3 to 5 sort of allowed that to happen with what we saw at the very end with just it looking like a totally different team. So I think the 24 innings are going to be easy to lump in. I do think you have to separate it out kind of game by game to fully understand and break down how they got to that point kind of late in Game 5. You know, but there's also, I think, and I said it Friday night, and I still think it this morning, that there's just like a head scratching element of what happened, you know, and it just looked offensively like such a different group that got away from what made them them all year, and I think we're going to be asking kind of that question for a while here, sort of what happened, and that's what it makes so stunning. You know, not necessarily that they even lost, because it was a 98 win Dodger team, and it's a 5-game series, and anything can happen, and those Dodgers are good. But the way it happened, I think, is obviously the really, really stunning part.
Sam, in some ways, Mike Schilt's pitching strategy actually worked, because, you know, part of the decision to start Dylan Cease in Game 4 was to make sure that Yu Darvish was going to be on the mound in Game 5. And that worked. That worked brilliantly. Yu Darvish was, you know, everything you kind of hoped he would be in Game 5 of that series. And we talked about it last week. Had Martin Perez started Game 4, which is what a lot of people kind of wished after the fact had happened, don't you feel like Dylan Cease would have had to have started Game 5?
Yeah.
And I just don't know that would have had any different. So, I mean, evaluate kind of Mike Schilt's managing in your mind in this series.
Yeah, I think now looking back at it, if you're going to criticize the Padres for starting Dylan Cease, I just think it's total Monday morning quarterbacking. Because, yes, are there numbers about guys going on 3 days rest? Were you running a little bit of a risk of Cease not being great on 3 days rest? Sure. But the fact that you had Darvish lined up for Game 5 anyway at the time heading into Game 4, I totally understood it. And had they not gone with that approach and that strategy, and Martin Perez gives up a bunch of runs, guess what? I guarantee we are saying the opposite today, that Cease should have started Game 4, and you wouldn't have asked him to go get 7 innings. You were asking him to, you know, get you off on a good foot, and unfortunately it didn't happen. Still in retrospect, even though you were asking Dylan to do something he doesn't normally do, which is pitch on 3 days rest, I had no problem, and I'm going to keep saying it, even after the fact, of them being aggressive and trying to get Cease in there, knowing they had Darvish lined up for 5, I really, approach-wise, strategy-wise, I think it's total, you know, hindsight is crystal clear when you look back on it. In the moment, I'm going to stick with what I said at the time, and that I had no problem with it, and I understood the aggressive nature of it, because you had Darvish lined up. It didn't work out. You know, to me, this was a series that just, for whatever reason, both with what happened in Game 4 and what happened offensively over the course of a couple of games, just didn't work out. And they got beat, and the guys kind of echoed that in the clubhouse after the game. I mean, you know, they ran into a Dodger team that all of a sudden pitched really, really well, and they got beat.
Yeah, no question. Talking to Sammy Leavitt here on Ben and Woods this morning. And, you know, you saw what you saw from Yamamoto, I thought, was pretty special on Friday night. And you know, there was no deer in headlights look for him.
No.
Whatever plan they gave him to attack Padres hitters, it worked. It worked very, very well. You know, expanded the zone, pitched up in the zone. And there was the difference, I think. Those adjustments did not make them. Dylan Cease did not make them from start to start. Yamamoto did. And to go out against a guy that you see really, really well and to be completely flummoxed by him, I understand that it's like, oh, okay, well, it happens. He was due. You know, they paid him all that money for a reason. That's the toughest one for me to swallow, man, is you know, nothing off of that guy. And you know, there's all the narratives that we talked about. Well, don't worry. We rough up starters. We can't hit the bullpen.
Right.
And then to have
right.
that game where you can't hit the starter or the bullpen, it's hard to stomach on the last game of the year.
And they also didn't get off to good starts in either Game 4 or Game 5.
Yep.
And as we're learning throughout this postseason, and maybe in particular with this Dodger team, with the way they're starting to pitch in the bullpen in particular, last night was a little different because Flaherty was great and they didn't have to use a lot of relievers. But we're starting to see if they get a lead, they're in a really good spot.
Oh, yeah,
and
a lot of confidence.
You could see it just in the first inning that this was going to be a different kind of night for the Padres and Yamamoto. You could see it the 1-2-3 first inning.
It was brutal.
It was a totally different guy on the mound. It was a totally different result, and you could kind of feel it. Like, I hate to say it, and it's not that I lost all faith as the game went on, but you were sitting there as it got 6th, 7th, 8th innings, and you're seeing the at-bats and kind of how things are looking, and all of a sudden, for a team that had scored so often and strung hits together as well as any team in baseball this year, it was like, this ain't looking like they're going to be able to kind of get it going here.
It was the first time, Sammy, in the whole season.
The whole season. And look, I had post-game a couple of people that called in and were talking about 2023. And let me preface this by saying that I think this team deserves more respect than that, because I think they proved over the course of the year they were not the 2023 Padres. But it looked a little, there were those games, if you remember, in 2023 where it just seemed like offensively it wasn't their night, right?
Yeah, most of them.
And it was just kind of like, what's going on? And for one night, and again, I think you've got to separate game four and game five a little bit, because game four, they were trailing 5-0 after 2.5.
Yeah.
Very different kind of game. But game five, it was like, what is this?
What is this?
This looks 23-ish. Like, in that part, I don't know that you're going to be able to really wrap your head around why that happened all of a sudden. And again, I don't want to say all of a sudden the 23 Padres showed up, because I think that's disrespecting what this group was. But it was just weird. I don't know how else to put it. It was weird. It just, from a hitting standpoint, a runners in scoring position standpoint, a battling late, a coming back, everything that made this team just seemed to evaporate for a couple of games, and especially game five, where it was so winnable and so much in reach.
Well, Sammy, I think I speak on behalf of the three of us and all of our tier ones when I thank you for your coverage all season long, some long, long days and nights, for all the times you came on with us to discuss Padres baseball. And certainly you deserve a little bit of time off, but hopefully you won't be a stranger in this off season, and we will get a chance to catch up and talk about some of the future storylines and stuff, but we'll leave those for now. But just wanted to appreciate you, Sammy, and thank you again for all of your appearances and everything you did this year.
Well, thank you guys, and I've said it to you before, you guys have welcomed me with open arms from the day I got here, and I'm a tier one, and I mean it when I say it. Being on Ben and Woods is certainly a very important part of kind of my existence on this station and in San Diego, and I'm appreciative to be a part of it, and thank you guys for having me as part of your tier one Ben and Woods family.
Thank
so
you, brother.
I appreciate it. Love
and
it.
I'll finish with Sammy. Something you probably said a lot growing up. Go Mets.
Yes.
Yes. LFGM.
didn't work out last night. I don't know. Yeah. Last night kind of felt like the magic's running out.
Sure did.
It did. Thanks, yeah. Sammy. Talk to you soon. Sam Levitt, our Padres pre- and post-game show host all season long. And I think he made a really good point there, Woods, that while, yeah, it's easy to just lump in the 24 innings, they were all very different. You know, when you have a 6-1 lead or even a 6-5 lead, you're trying to hold on to it.
Yeah, man.
You're not pressing. That's different.
Yeah.
You're just trying to add on.
Yeah.
The second game, they actually got some hits, just didn't come through with runners in scoring position. And then the last game, the offense just didn't show up
just
at all.
Ice cold.
It was actually different.
Every time.
All three games.
No question, man.
The result, though, was the same with zero runs. All right, we'll come back, reset everything, and I think we're going to play some Take on Woods. A little delayed coming up next year on 97.3 The Fan.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.